Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Lions Collective. Today, Pack Show Training Camp. We got to get into it. Jahmyr Gibbs, what's going on with his extension? We'll talk about it all here on Lions Collective. A lot of things are different here on Lions Collective. I'm testing a new microphone I bought 20 minutes ago. I'm wearing these big headphones and no Colton Pouncey. So there's a lot of things going on right now. Colton is busy with real life things right now. He's going to miss today's show. He's been active, so we appreciate him. We'll catch him next week to kind of recap some of the stuff. But I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi, Woolworth Sports, Crunch Time Sports. Joined alongside me, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Will Birchfield, 97.1 The Ticket. And guys, training camp is happening. Things are happening. Jahmyr Gibbs' contract hopefully is happening in the near future. We'll talk about that. Brad Holmes went on SiriusXM. I know people are probably saw the clip and got to see, you know, people try to read between the lines, and Brad was asked about it. But what was your guys' interpretation of that, and just maybe the timeline, just week to week here, updating the fans on when you think it gets done officially?
Go ahead on the XM thing, Will.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a GM asking a question carefully about an ongoing negotiation. I think a lot of people probably latched onto the fact that when the follow-up question was posed to Brad as, but you're going to get it done eventually, and Brad said, hopefully, it might have cast some level of doubt onto this conversation. In my mind, there isn't any, and I don't think anyone should read into that Jahmyr Gibbs is making an outrageous ask. I'm sure based on Bijan's contract that he signed yesterday, Jahmyr is looking for and going to sign in the neighborhood of $23 million per year. I know the reported figure for Bijan was up to $75 million over 3 years, but the actual average base salary is, what, 22.5, 22.25, and I would venture to guess pretty confidently that both the Lions and Gibbs would be comfortable with an average base salary per year of 23, and I think that would get this deal done, and I think it'll get it done soon.
Let's get everybody to tune out right now as I go even more math heavy. So going back to offseason projections, I projected Gibbs at 4 for 77, and when I said that number, it was baking in the $14.3 million fifth year option they had. And so when you look at Bijan's contract, as Will was saying, it was presented as 3 for 75. In reality, it's about 3 for 67. And that money, it kicks in 2028. So it's 2028, 2029, 2030. The 27 figure is his fifth year option. And so the only notable difference there is his fifth year option is actually less than Gibbs, even though he was drafted earlier, because Gibbs had multiple Pro Bowls, Bijan had one. Gibbs's fifth year option was $14 million. Bijan's was $11 million. I look at these two guys as 1A, 1B in terms of value running backs in the NFL. I'm talking production, age, durability. Like, these are the two guys. You could argue it in one given year, there are other guys in that mix, obviously, but in terms of like long-term value, these are the cream of the crop in the league. And I think there's very little that separates them. It's really just the type of back you like. Do you like a little bit more dual threat and speed, or you'd like a little bit bigger between the tackles, probably a body frame set to handle a bigger workload over a longer period of time? So they're both unbelievable talents. And if Gibbs's annual average value is identical to Bijan's, it would not surprise me. But he does have that little $3 million extra on the fifth-year option. So I was just doing the math, and realistically, I think Gibbs is probably looking at 3 years, 4 years, I guess, 80. So if Bijan's is 4 years, 78, Gibbs is probably 4 years, 80, 4 years, 81. There's going to be the similar incentives in there that let him elevate it to what he needs to. But I think these contracts are going to come in real close, and rightfully so. Like I said, Bijan has gotten better every year. Bijan led the NFL in yards from scrimmage last year. They're just both exceptional talents. I don't think either one can make a case to be paid even beyond a fraction or a percentage more than the other. It's just the way it is. And so the Lions have to belly up to the table and pay the piper. It's just what it is. You can't get around it. You can't undercut Bijan. You're going to have to at least match that. But I really thought there was a good chance it got done today. It did. You know, they had an off day. Bijan got done. I think the Lions are urgent in wanting to get Gibbs into camp. So I would be really surprised if this thing drags out for too long, regardless of maybe the cryptic tone that, that Holmes had in this interview today.
Yeah, I will say now that the pads have come on in camp and the run game is treated a little bit more seriously, there is somewhat of a ticking clock to get Jameer back out there, especially in a new offense with a new OC and with a number of new or reshuffled offensive linemen. I mean, you talk to offensive linemen who have played the game for a long time, either past or present. Like I was having a conversation with TJ Lang a couple of days ago, for example, and John Jansen from our station would say the same thing. It takes time for offensive linemen and running backs to operate in concert and for a running back to understand how an offensive lineman places blocks and for an offensive lineman to understand how a running back sees things. And look, Gibbs is a pretty instinctive player. I don't think he is a very hard running back to block for. There's a crease, he's going to hit it. But look, you do have a new right tackle in there. You've got a new center in there. You've got a left tackle who previously has only played right tackle for the most part. So with the pads on and these team periods now being more meaningful in the scope of getting the offense ready for the season, I do think we're beginning to feel just a little bit some anxiousness. In fact, that was the word that Campbell used to get Jameer back on the field, to get him into the offense, and just for the team to have a better idea of what it's going to look like when they hand him the ball this season.
I think Jacob Sailors and Jabari Small are very excited by the opportunity they have right now, right? Like, Vaki's out. This is a good chance for them to kind of state their case for a roster spot. But I also think they would like Gibbs back in there because they are working their asses off of practice. I looked at Jacob Sailors walking off the field the other day and, you know, just sluggish. But like, he had double the workload in this practice. So they're putting a lot of work on the other guys. I think Pacheco's looked really good. We'll get maybe more into some of the names that have looked good here in camp coming out. But, you know, I think, like I said, Jabari Small, Jacob Sailors, this is an opportunity for them to take advantage of, but it can only go on so long before, well, they already did. They brought in Blackshear. Like, you're going to have to bring in more bodies just to handle some of this workload.
Yeah, and one part of that, too, is Vaki obviously going down with a broken nose. And speaking of Vaki out carrying Pacheco this year, my bold offseason prediction takes a hard hit. Just one rep into team drills with pads on in training camp. So I think I'll rest that one. You can fade me on that, Jeff.
yeah. Well, Jake Bates. I mean, hey, the people need to pay attention.
He was
Jake
smacking Bates, that man. Thing a couple of days ago, but yesterday, right? Yeah. 8 for 8.
By the way, best day quick, by far for him.
Yeah, he was killing it.
I want to mention Kyle. He's in here too. Shout out Kyle, Dog and Pony. He says, Will, the flow level is level 100.
Yeah. Well, I got probably a month more of letting it rage, so we're going to get it to 101 if possible.
This is like what the length was when I think I started working with you. God, yeah. How long has it been, Will? How long have we been working together? Like 10 years?
Yeah. I took myself seriously for the second five of those.
I remember when you came in with the hair chopped off and it was jarring. It was jarring for me.
It was like when Tate showed up at home last year, having freshly cut the mullet with a buzz cut. And his wife was like, who is that? Yeah. What are you doing here?
They weren't even married yet. She was reconsidering.
Yeah.
By the way, I do want to mention, because, you know, if people don't know this, you could become a YouTube member. You could be a member of Lions Collective. So shout out Primetime 1282 for the membership as well.
Hell yeah.
And also, I know we talked about this too. We want to get you guys involved. And you know, we obviously, you know, we have an hour to do a bunch of different topics. But Jordy did ask, is there any chance Gibbs wants 4 added years? Could that be part of the holdup potentially?
I think that's really unlikely. And I say that because five years for a back is a long time. And really it's 6 if you include the one that's upcoming. And so that's, I think it's better for him, given he's just 24 years old. There's an opportunity to, if you believe in yourself and you believe in your durability, like, there's been an opportunity to cash in again. And obviously won't quite be ever at this level, but that cap is not going down by percentage. And so, you know, there'll be an opportunity to probably get another 2-3-4 year deal done down the road. And if he's still cooking with the Lions there in 2029 or whatever, it's likely the Lions will be the team that ponies up.
No pun intended. By the way, get your get a dollar off any beer when you mention Lions Collective at Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Let's get to training camp. If you're
Jeff, really quick. Just one other question for the chat. No, Gibbs and Bijan do not share the same agent, different agencies. So just wanted to point that question important. Out.
It that's does important. Sound like those two have been in touch though, during these hold-ins and since Bijan signed, that, you know, they've been kind of bouncing ideas off each other. And it sounds like Bijan is telling Jameer to hang in there. And Campbell's like, no, get your ass out here.
let's get to training camp. So yeah. early risers, if you're a good news first type of person, this is perfect. We'll get into the good news. So give me some early risers for you guys during training camp.
I got a list, Will, so I'll let you go first and I'll bounce back off of that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I wrote some names down here too. I will start with, I think the player that everyone is rooting for, and that's Ahmed Hassanein. And look, he is the most open of all books. And so when you get a chance to talk to Ahmed Hassanein, you get not only his life story, but also a lot of really valuable insight into sort of how he is approaching the game this year versus last year and how he sees himself fitting in. And obviously he's made noise in the early stages of camp and certainly with the two padded practices, I think he's popped in both of those. And when I say he's making noise, literally, he has a new routine of, after making a positive play, flexing and roaring as loud as he can, and oftentimes staring down the player that he just beat in a one-on-one rep, as he did a couple of days ago in a special teams drill against tight end Thomas Gordon. And the way Thomas Gordon reacted so casually and unbothered made me realize that everyone is just used to Ahmed Hassanein roaring after big plays. And he has been in the backfield a lot, I think, in team drills, and he's getting pretty consistent second team reps now. He's had a knack for tackles for loss, for getting at least to the quarterback and setting up sacks for others, which he would tell you is just as valuable as a sack of his own. And it's notable here that he's playing a different position this year in the Lions defense. And even more notably to me is the fact that he's playing the position that he played throughout his time at college at Boise State. He was the big end there, playing opposite what the Boise State defense called the stud end, which is more of the traditional rush end in the mold of, say, Hutch or Derek Moore or DJ Wanham. And that's what he was doing for most of last season. The Lions started him out last year as the big end, moved him pretty quickly to rush end. And so Ahmed spent most of his first season, once he got healthy, honing a new position, a new part of his game. And he also spent a lot of time watching film and studying guys like Hutch and other traditional rush ends, past and present, around the NFL. And, you know, in some ways might have lost sight just a little bit of what he does best and who he is. And he said this year he's kind of back to being himself. And he feels like his body type, for one, and his play style is suited to playing that hand in the dirt, do the dirty work, big end role. And I think so far we're seeing some fruits from that labor. And look, we can maybe circle back to this name when we get to three slow starters, but you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Hassanein is at least closing the gap, if not on the level of Levi Onwuzurike, if you want to talk about big ends, potential big ends on this roster. And I know they also see some interior value in Levi, but to me, like Tyler Lacy, another fast starter, is clearly going to play a big role in this defense as the big end. But Hassanein is making a case to be the number two in that department. And, you know, he was walking off the field a couple of days ago. Well, actually, most days he seems to be walking off the field with Brad Holmes or finding Brad Holmes. And their conversation on Monday was a pretty sincere one, where Hassanein actually teared up telling Brad how much he appreciates Brad taking a chance on him, believing in him. And he told us yesterday, I think he told Colton the same thing when those two spoke a couple of days ago, that the response from Brad was awesome. And I want to make sure I get this right, so I'm going to pull up the quote itself and the story I wrote today. But so, like, you know, Ahmed sitting there with tears in his eyes and just like stressing his desire to Brad to prove the Lions right, to prove Holmes right. And he said Brad's response was, Ahmed, you're proving me right by doing what you're doing, and the big end role is going to be good for you. I'm excited for you. You're a football player. And Hassanein told him he loves him because he loves everyone, and Brad said, I love you too. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but I do think, Justin, you probably agree that we're seeing Hassanein begin to climb the depth chart in a pretty meaningful way, because he's probably playing a role where he's more suited to play.
Well, I can say this because I love you. All your answers are long-winded answers, my friend. yeah, Hassanein's been awesome. And I think more than Levi, it's Peyton Turner he's gaining ground on, right? That's a guy I thought highly of through OTAs. I go, okay, I get it. I see the body type. I see the vision. Same thing we said with Marcus Davenport. The concerns were the same as Marcus Davenport in terms of durability. Turner practices once, hurts his back, hasn't been back to practice since. And so that's opened the door for a guy like Hasani. I look at Levi. Levi's been working mostly as a three tech through OTAs and even into training camp. He does do some of the big end stuff. It's like a almost like a reverse flex for him. But I mean, that's an interesting conversation regardless, because he's been doing a lot of third team stuff. So I will stick with the other big end, though. Tyler Lacy, I think, is maybe the biggest surprise of camp for me. Kind of an afterthought in a lot of ways. And I feel like I should explain what big end is to people that maybe don't know what it is. When the Lions are in a five-man front, typically four rundowns, the big end lines up directly over the offensive tackle. It's called a five-tech, and then typically has a more of a rush linebacker, your Derek Barnes, your Trevor Nowoski, to their outside shoulder. And so with a Hasani or a Lacy, who's 300 pounds, you know, the size almost of a defensive tackle, you know, it allows them to lean into their power. You still want some explosion there, but you want violent hands, the ability to shed. Hasanin's probably weakest skill is his bend. And so when you were mentioned, I'd completely forgotten that he was playing Hutchinson's position, and he was talking about mirroring Hutchinson last year. Like, it's a ridiculous concept.
Not going to happen.
that's not his strength, right? Yeah. Like, Hasanin is a power player, so it just makes perfect sense that that's where they're putting him. But Lacy has been taking the first team reps at that big end spot, and he's basically in like a rotation with DJ Wonnum. Wonnum comes in on pass downs, a little bit wider, four-man fronts, smart player, instinctual player. You can understand why the Lions signed him, but Lacy has been a force in camp. He's done a lot of good stuff in one-on-ones. He's done a lot of good stuff in team drills. He blowing up run plays the other day, pressured Goff on a throwaway, pressured Teddy Bridgewater on that long completion that everybody wrote about to Dominic Lovett that was actually a Tyler Lacy sack.
100%. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. And so, like, it's a guy that I probably didn't think a whole lot about, but it's weird with those guys that get claimed off waivers right before the season opener, because they just get dropped in and expect to acclimate right away, and it's so difficult. Tyler Lacy, like Thomas Harper, has gotten this full offseason with the team and really kind of got to tap into what they know about him now, what he knows about the scheme now. And I mean, like, if I created a 53-man roster, like, right now, Tyler Lacy is safe, like, exceedingly safe. I don't want to say lock, but like very close to a lock. And so that's been a really interesting one.
Agreed. Jeff, anyone popping in the Twitter sphere as far as fast starters, guys who are making an early push for a starting job or even a job on the 53 that the people are talking about out there?
I think the big one, and it's more of a personal one for me, because my co-host Booner went to SVSU, Nick Whiteside, who also went to school with my co-host Booner, and he's well aware. And Booner used to tell me all the time about him and be like, this guy's a grinder, you know, like when he first was on the practice squad. Back at SVSU, this guy used to be in the gym late. You know, he used to have a key to the gym working out. Now I see him making plays. I know we're going to talk about the cornerback two battle specifically, but I think that's been the one people have been like, oh, like, you know, with the TA stuff and now people paying attention to corner, and you have Nick Whiteside, by the way, part of Legion of Whom, who last year started, played really well against the Bucks. People forget about that too, but I think it's been Nick Whiteside, to be honest with you, that people probably are paying attention to. I know corner two spot obviously has a lot of eyeballs, but I think Nick Whiteside, probably deservedly so, based on the reporting I've been reading from you guys, he's been having a pretty good camp.
Yeah.
My man had four PBUs in that Tampa Bay game. I know they list him for three, but he also had one on a two-point conversion that doesn't go on the stat sheet the same. Yeah. Like, that was a remarkable performance. The thing I really like about Whiteside, Will, his personality, his demeanor is very similar to Rocky Sin. Like, big, it's just time. All business, very serious. Everything kind of rolls off his back, and like, that's just such a great demeanor. Like, you so frequently get these flamboyant, loud, verbose corners. Like, that's just the nature of you have to have this almost projected confidence. And like with Yasin and Whiteside, it's like quiet killer, right? And the build is prototypical. I mean, it's what you love for the position. He's 6'1"-ish. He's got long limbs. He's physical at the line of scrimmage. He's physical down the field. And yeah, that leads to some extra penalty flags in this league, but like, just fits the Lions play style like a glove. And I don't want to pretend like he's in the mix for the starter job. I know Dan Campbell said it the other day, but I think that's probably a stretch. But that's a guy that I think with the Arnold news on top of it has played himself from maybe like fringe bubble to on the right side of the bubble as we kind of approach that second wave of training camp with the first preseason game coming up.
Yeah, that dude is just like laser focused on the next rep in front of him, a lot like Rocky Sin, and he's not going to say a whole lot, even when he's playing well. In fact, when I asked him a couple of days ago about the fact that, in my own words, say, you're kind of balling out so far in camp, he said, I wouldn't say balling out. I wouldn't say balling out at all. I'm just making a few plays here and there, which kind of felt like talking to Rocky Sin, honestly. And if you had taken that same suggestion to someone like Terrion Arnold, you would get a much different response. You'd get the prototypical corner response that Justin is talking about. But it's funny you bring up that Tampa game. That's sort of the flashpoint for everyone when talking about Whiteside, because he showed that in a big opportunity he could really thrive in the NFL against, by the way, great receivers that night. Like, he was in a bunch of matchups one-on-one with Amika Abuka, and he won most of those matchups. And when you bring it up to him, he's like, he doesn't even want to talk about it. In fact, he says, I get asked about this all the time by my parents, by my friends, my sister, and I'm like, that's in the past. Like, that happened almost a year ago. It doesn't mean anything to anyone anymore, which is, again, is exactly the way the Lions want their players to be wired. But I agree, you know, that one of the big differences for Whiteside in camp this year is that he came in last year, in his own words, as a camp body. Like, they needed people to play corner with a really thinned out secondary based on some camp injuries. And so they brought him in to be a body, and they never really had intentions to keep him around, and they didn't. They brought him back when they need to. He enters this year and this camp with a real chance to win a job. And he also enters this year in this camp with an understanding of Shepard's defense that he didn't have last year. And he said that's been the biggest reason that he feels like he's, again, not balling out, but making a few plays in camp. And he said it's actually the first time in his professional career, even the XFL included, where he's returned for a second season in the same defense. And that can go a really long way for a young player. And so I think we're seeing him, not just win matchups one-on-one, but understand how the rest of the defense is operating around him, where his help is, where, like, how to play with leverage. And so far, man, Nick Whiteside is definitely making a strong impression.
Turned Tim Patrick into a camp body when he came in as a camp body. Brett Holmes, like, this guy's out of here.
Yeah.
Those joint practices, I remember, like, Dolphins writers are like, oh my God, when it comes down to cuts, like, we're all writing that the Dolphins should claim this guy. Like, he was killing it in those early practices, and he faded in preseason four, and it cost him a job. I was really surprised it cost him a practice squad spot, but you know, he dug in and kind of refound himself mentally, and I think he's all the better for it.
Before we move on, I we haven't talked about it yet, but I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts on maybe the fit or the role. I know someone, actually Kyle, asked it in the chat, because Roeder got hurt. They signed Devin White. And I know people see the name and they're like, Devin White, you know, and it's really like, what does the role look like? You guys have gotten a chance to kind of see him out there. People heard from him. What's your guys' interpretation of maybe how Devin White fits, or what an ideal role, best case would be for a guy like Devin White?
Fire away, Justin.
First of all, super disappointing for Roeder. I thought he was way ahead of, I guess, my personal expectations of where he would be. Obviously, the downhill stuff for him has always looked good on tape, but I thought he was just kind of showing a pretty advanced understanding for a rookie of what he was being asked to do in all phases and tracking toward, not necessarily a starting job, but I think a sprinkling in defensive role as a rookie, which is maybe more than you probably anticipated. Devin White comes in. Devin White benefits from that. You know, there was some reports or speculation that the Lions were going to bring in White anyway, but I think this kind of accelerated that.
Yeah.
Not a camp body. I think we're seeing really quickly with just kind of him getting a little sprinkling with first team reps that he is a weak side linebacker in the scheme, and he is going to compete and push Malcolm Rodriguez for that job. Obviously, way, way, way too early to say. I think Rodriguez has actually had a really nice start to camp. Lot of run stops, as you would expect with Malcolm Rodriguez, probably a hip toss or two that we haven't written about, and a couple pass breakups, including a really, really impressive one on one-on-one coverage of Sam Laporta in the end zone. So I don't think Rodriguez has done anything wrong, but Devin White's got a track record, and you can say whatever you want about the PFF numbers and all that, but it, you don't just rack up 140 tackles in this league doing nothing. And I think there's there was a 3-year stretch in Tampa where White averaged something like 130 tackles, and then last year drops 176. So high effort player in a low effort situation in Las Vegas. So I think the Lions like him. I think they see a good fit. And so he's going to push to be that weak side linebacker in that mix with Barnes and Campbell, and push Malcolm Rodriguez for a job.
Campbell's like Devin White for a long time, going back to their days as rivals in the NFC South when Campbell was coaching the Saints and Devin White was an all-pro rising star for the Buccaneers. And when they brought him in recently and they sat down, Campbell was like, listen, you were just the guy that we always had to spotlight on tape because you were going 100 miles per freaking hour. And that's what we want you to do here. And it's also what he obviously did last year. It's pretty incredible. The Lions now have on their roster the second leading and third leading tackler in the NFL last year. And yes, there is some downside to White's numbers, unlike Campbell's. I think Campbell only had 11 missed tackles last year of his 178 successful tackles, where White, I think, had the second most missed tackles in the NFL. So no, you're not getting like Jack Campbell 2.0, but you are getting a really strong, powerful, and pretty instinctive player. And you're also getting a player who spent a lot of time with Casey Rogers in Tampa. And that matters to me because there is an understanding on the part of Casey Rogers as to how to best utilize Devin White in a scheme. And he was talking about that a couple of days ago, that like those two did a lot of things together. When Devin White was sort of running that Tampa defense and Casey Rogers was running the defensive line, as far as working with the front and the linebackers, he said Rogers put him in a lot of blitzing situations and in a lot of stunts. And so he said, like, he knows how to utilize my strengths and he should be able to help this coaching staff make the best use of me. And it's interesting because I thought that was the most realistic role for White when he arrived, like sort of a situational pass rusher. I didn't take him for much of a coverage linebacker, but the way that Dan talked about him yesterday as a potential will would suggest they do see him playing a little bit in space and lining up across from some tight ends. So I don't know what the role will exactly be, but I do know that this guy can come down pretty hard against the run and can make some plays in the backfield against quarterbacks. So it'll be fun to watch that role evolve here over the next month. But I've been impressed so far. You can tell that when he engages an offensive lineman, they feel it. Like, he's got blowback when he comes 7 or 8 steps from linebacker depth into an offensive lineman. They are feeling it. And that's the reason why he was so successful in Tampa. And he's clearly still got that burst at just 28 years old.
He's kind of built like Steven Tulloch. I mean, 6 foot, 252 pounds. Like, he's a bowling ball that has natural leverage at that size. Right. And I'm glad you brought up the pass rush, because I think it gets lost. You know, this is a guy that had, I think, 9 sacks during his Pro Bowl season or the season before. He's got 25 in his career. And, I think Anzalone was taking steps forward in that department. And I think Rolder is actually a pretty good pass rushing linebacker. And I think the Lions, that's important to them, right? Like, we're looking at it from a coverage per second weak side. And I always laugh when I look at coverage numbers for linebackers. For his career, White's allowed a 77 point something completion percentage. And like, that's normal. That's what linebackers allow.
Running backs,
like,
and tight ends.
Bro, it's, I say it all the time, like, fans and media, I'm guilty of this, is like, oh, go get a linebacker and cover, or go get a tight end that can block. Those are unicorns.
Yeah.
Like, they're unicorns. There's like 5 really good ones at both those things. And so, like, I think you appreciate kind of the well-rounded skill set White brings. Obviously, knows for the football with all those tackles, but I mean, maybe the secret sauce here is the pass rushing element is what we're overlooking a little bit.
Well, before we get in,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we're going to get into Prize Picks. So if you have anything to say,
no, let's get into Prize Picks. Let's do it.
Yeah. So before we continue this,
some John Collins.
I got you. Oh, it's sick today. You're going to love this one. I'm a sicko. Before we,
I'm going to zoom in.
Before we get to starters in camp, we'll get to some more. I got to tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks. Oh, and this thing is all over the place. Let me try this one. Okay.
Doesn't matter.
All right. Well, let me see if I can put you this on the screen here. Let me see if I can figure this out.
Bang. This is live betting Jeff.
Let me see. Hold on. I'm cooking. Hold on.
Let the man cook.
All right. Look at that. We figured it out. I told you I'm a sicko, by the way. I said that.
And Chase Brownback?
Okay, hold on. Hold on. Hold on. So we did Jake Bates last week. All right. And what we're doing here, and by the way, Prize Picks, you know, play $5, get $150 if you win. For new users, use that code HMA. We love Prize Picks. America's number one sports pick app. I'm going with some future games here, more or less. Very simple when you use Prize Picks, and I'm going more. I'm going with the Bucks versus the Bengals. Speaking of the Buccaneers with Devin White, this is the Baker Mayfield Buccaneers. Baker didn't get a contract, and I love an upset Baker Mayfield. I love it. I love it when he plays with an edge, and I'm going to take the more with his passing yards against the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm going to go more for Emeka Ebuka against the Bengals. You guys know why. Bengals secondary, not good. Chase Brown, I'm going to go more, 0.5 rushing, receiving, touchdowns. He's going to score a touchdown this game, okay? Yeah, I'm betting on Chase Brown, but guess what? You can I'm picking Chase Brown, excuse me. You can tail my picks and pick more or less with me on Prize Picks. Use the code HMA. Again, HMA, play $5, get $150 if you win. All right, let's get back to the show here. We got more to get to.
Do you get insurance on those picks if one of those guys gets hurt in camp?
So let's just say Prize Picks, they love Lions Collective. They do hook your boy up. All right. So we do.
They treat you right.
They treat me right. So, I don't need to call the number. Right. Like, you know, this is private, takes care of Lions Collective. Let's get into some slow starters. We talked about some
highlight
players.
Jeff, can I cut
players.
You off real quick? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think Aleem was our cover photo. We should probably just briefly touch on Aleem.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Justin, how good does Aleem McNeil look for the people? Just let him know. I mean, he looks like Aleem McNeil of 23 and 24.
Let's go. Bro, the entire defensive line, I think, has looked in a really good way. Aleem has looked explosive. Tyleek has looked, he's popping in my notes every single day. That's just that one snap where he's firing into the backfield and destroying somebody. And you're like, how do you teleport there? What happened? He said, Wanham and Lacey look good. Hutchinson, do you even need to say it? Like, I think the front might be kind of good. Might be kind of good. Now the secondary might be the problem. You know, it's a little role reversal, but, I don't know. I like the way all those guys look, and Aleem is part of that, the rebound there for sure.
Yeah, I thought the response yesterday from Tate was pretty telling when he was asked who stood out on the defensive line from his perspective, and he was like, Aleem. You know, I think that's a guy that he practiced against all last year, and the difference that he feels on the receiving end of McNeil's reps is huge, he said, compared to last year. And Aleem will tell you himself that, you know, while he was careful not to make any excuses last year, it was impossible for him not to feel the effects of coming off a torn ACL, both mentally and physically. But he's wired right now. He can trust that leg. And I think he's a little leaner than maybe he was last year. And he just seems to have that first step, that juice back. And I agree, Justin. Every single time they go into team periods, there's 54 in the notepad. There's 54 in the notepad. And he's very frequently in the backfield. So that could be a season-changing development for this team, maybe a ceiling-changing development if they can get Aleem back to where he was in 23-24 and paired with a possible year two Tyleek breakout, suddenly you feel pretty good about the havoc this team could create in the middle, which was obviously lacking last year with the guys they let go.
I think Aleem, and I talked about this in the media room, I don't know if you were there the other day, I was talking with some people about it, but like, it's just a good reminder as a reporter, you're trying to grow and recognize trends as well. But like, I'm done placing full expectations on guys coming back from serious injury.
Yeah.
You know, any ACL, Achilles, like Hutch was a freak last year. Like, I think anybody that does that comes back and has that kind of year, like it's a bonus. But like, I believe Aleem believed he was fully back when we talked to him last year. And I don't know if that's like, you're trying to psych yourself into believing it, but it's just not realistic. And so like, I guess maybe that's a conversation with Brian Branch, right? Like,
yeah.
We see Brian Branch finally working out on the sideline and you're like, oh, he's moving pretty well. I mean, but my expectations for Brian Branch, even though he leans more into instincts and anticipation than pure explosion athleticism, like, I'm couching my expectations when he gets back. If he's the same player, great. But I don't expect the same player. I expect 70% of the same player year one. And then, you know, year two, we can talk about him getting back to his level.
Yeah, the way Aleem put it was, I was good enough to go. And if I'm good enough to go, I'm going to go, because he owed it to the team and he owed it to his teammates. But I think the subtext there was I wasn't 100%. And, you know, he has admitted that himself. And I think I referenced this comparison a couple months ago talking about Mac. But go look at what Derrick Brown did coming off a major knee injury in 2024. So he suffered the injury in the first game of 24. So he actually had a full year and a full offseason to recover. And he came back really strong in 25, whereas Aleem suffered his injury late in 24, spent his entire offseason rehabbing, and was then sort of thrust into football activity. Well, he's had the full offseason that Derrick Brown had coming off his knee injury. And I think we're seeing a player who is back to himself.
Let's get into some guys maybe that you guys want more out of, or maybe some slow starters. I know someone asked in the chat too about maybe like a Rake Straw. We could get to the cornerback too. I know that was probably we'll save that conversation. I know people are asking about, but what are some guys for you that are some slow starters, guys?
We're in 36 minutes and we're reaching point two. Good job.
Yeah. We don't even need Colton.
Yeah, Colton would not have been very far in his move.
We'd still be talking Gibbs.
Nick Whiteside should go all day.
I would be very surprised if Will didn't agree, and so I'm forcing him to pivot to a secondary option here. But the slow starter that has surprised me and probably everyone that covers this team has been Tesla. There's this very true cliche. I mean, it's rooted in truth that the biggest jump for a player is year one to year two. You are beyond kind of the swimming in your own head of being a rookie, learning the system. And there's just this expectation you kind of hit the ground running that second off season. And look, you can't put too much stock in the guys we talked that have started well, because it's been two padded practices. There have been no preseason games. And I don't want you to put too much stock in us criticizing a slow start, because ultimately nobody's going to remember this last week of July come November, but it's been disappointing for Tesla. I think he's struggling to get separation. He's getting worked over pretty consistently by Rocky Sin, which good for Rocky Sin. It probably speaks volumes to the work he's putting in. But remember, Tesla was a slot receiver in college and didn't face a lot of press coverage. And I think the thing that is continuing to hold him back from reaching his potential, and not unexpectedly, is he's learning the nuances of beating press coverages, releases off the line of scrimmage. He's got the size. He has incredible top-to-bottom athleticism. But maybe the one thing with those two things is he's not the fastest from 0 to 10 miles an hour, right? Like, those initial steps are not the fastest thing, because it's a bigger body you got to get going. And so you're going to have to win with some physicality off the line of scrimmage. Your footwork is going to have to be pristine, and you know, it just hasn't been there quite yet. And we saw the contested catches last year. Unbelievable. I think that's still in there. We've seen a couple highlight reel type plays of him going up and over guys, but you kind of hope there'd be some more nuance to the route tree this year. And through the first week of camp, it's not there. And what does that mean? Well, I think we looked at Greg Dortch's addition as a supplement and not a 50-50 split like it was with Khalif Raymond. I think it's Greg Dortch is going to eat more into the pie than maybe we thought originally, because Greg Dortch has looked really, really good where Tesla has struggled. So, you know, maybe it's not going to be 80-20. Maybe it's going to be more like 60-40, at least out the gate. And so a lot of time to kind of get this thing on track. But right now, you know, Tesla has definitely been one of the slower starters in this camp.
Yeah, and if you don't think that's true, go listen to Dan Campbell talk about this a couple of days ago. He made it pretty clear that he's working through some things. He compared it to a golfer trying to fix his swing and then overcorrecting in one area and ending up a little bit confused as to how to get himself back on track. And he said, you know, he will, but there are kinks that he's working out. And when we talked to Tesla, I think this spring, and asked him where he wanted to develop his game most in the offseason, the two areas that he pointed to were short area quickness and releases. And that's good, because that is where he needs to grow. We just haven't seen that growth happen yet in camp. Obviously, the size is there, the length is there, the straight line speed is there. But when it comes to, shedding a defensive back off the line with those two things, releases and short area quickness. I'm sure Tesla would be the first to tell you that that hasn't been up to his liking, hasn't been consistent enough at all. And that is how Tesla can unlock the next level to his game. That's how he goes from just a red zone threat, just a deep threat, to a more comprehensive receiver. And so I think that's something to watch closely here over the next few weeks, especially in those one-on-one drills. Like if you're out at camp and everyone likes to watch the receivers against the DBs one-on-one, that could be a telling area of Tesla's game, just watching him try and win those releases and how he kind of works that short area quickness.
And I'm going to be really quick with this point, but it's worth a reminder that development is not the same for everybody, and it's not linear. And for all the talk of year one to year two, sometimes it's year two to year three. And if you want an example on this roster, Derek Barnes, right? Like sometimes it just takes a little bit longer for it to click. And I'm not saying that it won't click for Tesla by the end of camp or at some point this season, but if it doesn't, it doesn't mean you throw the guy in the trash. Like the talent is immense.
Yeah. And like Justin, not only did he play mostly slot receiver at Arkansas, he barely played much receiver at all in college before that. Like this is still a player that is sorting through and perfecting, honing the finer points of playing wide receiver. So it is far, far too early to be fretting about Tesla, but yeah, not the start I'm sure he was looking for.
I heard the ESPN alert. Did the Tigers trade Torres yet?
No, Gibbs signed for $35 million a year.
Great. Perfect. I got it pre-written. I'm ready.
Yeah, you nailed that projection.
let's
you got
get
another
into
slow starter, Will,
yeah,
really quick.
Before we move on, anyone else you'd like to
mention?
Well,
we touched on Levi a little bit off the top. Yeah. And that was another name that I was going to bring up. I just don't think I have noticed him that much in camp. You always end up going back through your notes after these practices, and there are names and numbers that you grow accustomed to seeing. And then there are those you realize you really haven't written down at all. And it feels like, especially when he's operating with the second team, Levi has struggled to make an impact. And, I still see the value in the vision of Levi as an interior pass rusher, especially based on what he did back in 2024. But then I remind myself how long ago 2024 was, especially for a player who's had a number of injuries other than the one that cost him last season. So, Levi's got some work to do. And I mean, at this trajectory and based on the small salary, you would start to have a conversation about his viability of making this team based on the players around him who seem to be gaining ground or making names for themselves.
I've had Levi more in my notebook than you have.
Okay.
But with the caveat that most of his destruction on reps has come in the third team. And that's, that is a caveat that it is worth mentioning, right? Like you're blowing up guard three. Like it's just not as impressive as beating Tate Ratledge, right? And so it reminds me a little bit of Kaminsky's final year here.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was a guy that had some really good seasons and missed some time and then came back. And then suddenly you're like, oh, what's he doing repping with the third team? That's a little weird. And if I've got my timeline correct, I believe we were kind of drifting towards Kaminsky being out, and then he suffered a season ended injury and it never mattered. Right. Mm-hmm. It never was a decision that had to be made. I'm not ready to make a 53 man projection. I might do something like that after the first preseason game. We got a little bit more to build off of. It's tough for me because I wonder at some level, are they just trying to get a look at some of these young players with the second team, giving them some tests? They know what they got in Levi. That's mm-hmm. that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah.
And on that frame, that's maybe a couple more disappointments for me, like Skylar Gil-Howard and Tyree West. They're late round picks for a reason, but I don't know. You hope to see some flashes from young defensive linemen, and really haven't seen a whole lot from either one of them to start camp yet. So I think there's still a lot of wide open competition there for that DT 4-5 if there's a fifth one.
Let's get into that quarterback two battle. We'll get into the offense maybe to close out the show. We'll see how much time we got here. But to start with the quarterback two battle, I know, you mentioned Rock making some plays. We mentioned Whiteside. Maybe you can reiterate just kind of hit his ranking in that competition, how much strides is he taking towards it. But really, Ennis Rakestraw, we have not really talked about him. And just in terms of that competition, because we had a bunch of people in the chat, it seems like Ennis is the big one, you know, second round pick. People are excited, hoping that he can kind of turn in and work out and be the guy to kind of take over that spot. But how's the cornerback two battle looking? And can you talk about the progress all those guys have made for that spot?
I mean, look, it's the reps are like 50-50 right now. Intentionally, they're letting them battle out. If I had any say, I don't actually. This is maybe breaking news, but I am starting Rockiesen without question. Like, he is the better player right now. I trust him way more to get the job done. Given the investment in Ennis, I think it's one of those really, really unusual situations where maybe you rotate him in and give him a series here and there to build up some confidence, to build up some reps, because inevitably you're going to probably need a third cornerback. That's just how it works in this league. Guys get hurt. But I think it is not a particularly close competition today.
Yeah, I don't think it's that Ennis has played that poorly. I actually thought he was playing pretty well to open camp. I think it's a better reflection of how well Rock has played and how much they believe in him based on the way he played last year. I felt like to open camp, Ennis was around the ball a lot, and his coverage, maybe less so in one-on-ones, but definitely in team drills, was generally pretty tight. And that's sort of the most difficult part of playing corner. But he, at least early on, was just a victim, it felt like, of a lot of contested catches. And sometimes you just have to tip your cap as a corner to a receiver making a great play. And it felt like that was happening at Ennis's detriment or expense a lot early in camp. He even acknowledged this when I asked him yesterday, like how he feels like he's played so far. He's like, well, I'm in the area. I just got to start disrupting the ball a little bit more. That's really about it. And that's a pretty crucial step. Yesterday wasn't a great day for him in one-on-ones. He got cooked a few times, well, a couple times by J-Mo, but like, who hasn't been cooked by J-Mo in one-on-ones? That's almost an impossible assignment when he has a whole field or at least one side of the numbers to work with. But yeah, he got him on a slant. And that was the play, Justin, right? When J-Mo caught the ball, turned upfield, and Ennis battled back for the punch out, but it was a clear catch. And then he also just sort of cooked him at the line of scrimmage. Ennis said he slipped. But to Ennis's credit, he bounced back in team drills. I don't think he allowed a single catch in his direction. We have seen him work in a little bit at nickel, but the Lions definitely prefer him and see him as an outside corner. But so far, that's Rock's job to lose. Ennis is going to have to do more than just be around the ball, especially for a player who has only logged 46 defensive snaps over his first 2 years in the NFL. It's not going to impress the staff enough to be the defensive back who's near the player catching the ball. Yes, it's a credit to some of his quickness, but he's going to have to start disrupting plays, as he said himself, to close that gap on Yassine.
I'm not as excited about the punch out. Like, I feel like that's not
normally. I
wasn't
trying to be. I was just
trying to
play it back in my head.
I think it got played up by the Lions on Twitter today with a little highlight. Like, it's just not part of that drill normally. And, you know, whatever. I think, like, the Lions encourage all their players to hold on to the ball, but, like, fumbles aren't part of a one-on-one receiver drill. I guess credit to Ennis to making something out of nothing. But that slant to J-Mo, all of them, uncoverable. Like, it's become, like, an absolute weapon. Like, last year it was the dig route, or not the dig route, I'm sorry, the hitch curl, whatever you want to call it, the coming back to the quarterback that became kind of his next tool in his bag. He's added kind of this lethal slant that just, like, is befuddling all of the Lions cornerbacks, DJ Reed, Ennis Rakestraw, and nobody can stick with it. So now you've got that, you've got the hitch curl, and you got the go ball. Like, add J-Mo to the list of risers, which, I mean, given how much he rose last year, it's tough to say that, but I think he's looked phenomenal to start this camp.
Yeah, I agree. And he's snatching the ball out of the air more than we've seen in the past.
No doubt.
That was an area of focus for him this offseason. He said he worked on that a lot. I think he was generally a body catcher over his first couple of years. He's becoming more and more of a hands catcher, especially in stride, which makes him even more dangerous because he's not breaking stride to catch the ball. So when he catches it in flight, see ya. That's how, like, I think back to Odell early in his career. He would turn those like 13-yard slants into house calls. It felt like it happened every other week because he was a hands catcher. Right here, he would never break stride. See ya. There's the track speed. And I think J-Mo is beginning to reach that level in his catching ability. There was a play he made early on in camp. I think it was in 7-on-7s, maybe 11, I forget. But he ran like a little out route to the sideline. He made a great high point hands catch, got his 2 feet down, and it happened to take place right in front of a group of reporters. And he knew that we were watching him closely. So he comes down, gets 2 feet in, turns around, goes, yeah, you like that? You like that? but he's definitely impressed so far. One more thing to add on NS, obviously the big question, can he stay healthy? He did try and he did make some changes this offseason to his regimen. He picked up yoga. He tried to put on some more muscle in his upper half coming off that shoulder injury. Even Deshae Townsend back in the spring was like, look at that dude. He just looks different in the neck and shoulder areas. I think he was like upper 190s when he came back to camp. He's shed some of that weight, as most guys do when they get into camp, and he's back down around 192. So that's where he intends to play. I think he played as a rookie closer to 188. So we'll see if his body is hardened in a meaningful way, but that's obviously the major question hanging over Ennis Rakestraw.
Needs to just hang out with Jackson Meeks. That dude put on 25 pounds.
Dude, that dude, he and Teddy.
All cake.
He and Teddy won a whole drive yesterday. Bang, bang, bang. They were on point.
Brady Gronk. I'd love to see it. Let's get into the offense because, you know, the Drew Petzing storyline, I think people have gotten to a point where they just kind of accept, or at least they feel super confident in what Petzing can be. But just that offensive identity, running the football, you know, with that offensive line, we had people in the chat asking about that as well. What has been your guys' evaluation of just this offense, maybe their identity, how they want to play? I know Dan spoke about it. They want to get back to pounding the football. Drew obviously loves that as well. But what are some of your guys' takeaways watching the offense?
What was that first pet at practice, Will? I know it's not totally uncommon for any coach, but was the first 12 snaps were just run. Let's just get going with this thing. And I'm going to bring up a different play because I think it speaks to what they're looking for. And it's a Pacheco play. I think he's looked good. It's a little tough to tell. And the sample size again is small, but I've liked the way he's moved. But more than that, he had a run up the middle the other day and he was met by Jack Campbell in the hole. And that's daunting for any man. and Jack does what Jack does and he hits him. And Pacheco just kept the legs churning and he turned a 3-4 yard gain into a 7 yard gain. It's like,
Demo run.
Like that's what this team is looking for from this unit. And so there was also a second day of camp, and I think it was an unpadded day where there was, it felt like 70% of the passes were screen passes. I know people see that, but what screen passes are an extension of the run game, and it's trusting the athleticism of your offensive line. It's trusting your blocking perimeter, and screens require a great deal of precision. You hear coaches frequently use the term landmarks. They want the blockers and the pass catcher to be at a specific spot for that play to execute. We already know this is a roster full of yak dudes, like just tons and tons of guys that get yards their catch. It's J-Mo, it's Dortch, it's St. Brown, it's Gibbs, right? And so, like, why wouldn't screen passes be a huge part of your offensive identity when you've got athleticism like Penei Sewell, like Tate Ratledge, like Christian Mahogany, who killed a man?
He blocks well in space, man.
Another guy to throw in the list of, I think, strong starts to camp. I fully believe this offense is going to be fine. I know there are detractors and doubters from Petzing, and I'm, you know, that's understandable given he's coming from Arizona, which is the most sexy offense. But again, we've talked about this before. The talent level from Arizona to the talent level from Detroit, to steal a quote from John Morton, kid in a candy store, right? Like, there's so many weapons here that I continue to say, if this team doesn't average very close to, if not more than 30 points a game, I would be pretty damn surprised.
Yeah, I mean, the identity that the Lions established the past few seasons when they rose into contenders was downhill, violent, bully ball on offense. And everything else stemmed off that, even to the defensive side, because they were able to control games. They obviously lost that last year, especially down the stretch. But you mentioned Petsy, who's obviously a huge piece of this. I think that's the biggest reason this year is because of the downhill nature and versatile nature of that Cardinals run game. And from 23 to 24, the Lions were held under 100 rushing yards in just four games, which is pretty insane. And only the Ravens over that stretch were held under 100 in fewer games. And the next closest teams in terms of being held under 100 over that two-year stretch were the 49ers, the Eagles, the Bills. We're talking Ravens, Lions, 49ers, Eagles, Bills, like class of the NFL over that stretch, and the Cardinals. And that's the sort of football that Dan Campbell wants to get back to. And it's the sort of football that Hank Fraley is adamant about getting back to. I thought Petsing a couple days ago on our airwaves at 97.1 had a great quote about how he wants the Lions to play. And I'll just read this off. He was talking about the run game, establishing the run game, because that's something that Campbell has stressed entering camp. And Petsing said, one of the things where he's challenged our guys is that if you're really good at running the ball, you should be able to tell the other team you're running the ball. And if they can't stop it, that gets scary for a defense when they're sitting there and they know it's coming and there's nothing they can do about it. And that was something the Lions did a lot in 23 and 24. They also ran the ball when teams were expecting pass and vice versa, but mostly they were just able to demoralize teams by running the ball right down their throat. And I go back to the overtime against the Rams in the season opener in 2024, when David Montgomery took the field and rammed the ball down their throats on like nine straight carries. That's the kind of football that Petsing's talking about, that Campbell wants to reprise. And, Tate Ratledge said yesterday that the physical mindset, the physical attitude this year on the field already feels different. And, I think that's notable. And I think it showed up so far in camp.
Do we get it all? Lions got a new president. That's
oh, happening. Yeah, that happened too. Come back next week for more.
Yeah, that kind of – I just casually saw that today on my phone. I'm like, oh, cool.
I got a split, fellas. I got to run on Fox 2.
There you go. We'll get out of here at Lions Collective. There you go. Will's got to go. We'll be back next week. We appreciate you guys. Subscribe, hit the like button, and we'll catch you guys next time. Until then –